Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we look at technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. In this episode, we talk with Lynn Falcone, the CEO of Quero Health in Texas. She leads a small hospital and health system, but they've undertaken some big efforts, including the upgrades of their electronic medical records. She talks about the challenges and the opportunities of leading a small hospital system and still bringing the latest technology to her patients. It's a very interesting conversation, so let's dive in. Well, thanks for joining us on Databook today. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor, Chief Healthcare Executive, and with me, I'm talking with Lynn Falcone, the CEO of Quero Regional Hospital. So thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, good morning, Ron.
Let's just jump right in. Why don't you talk a little bit about your background and about the hospital?
Okay. I have been here in Quero for 8 years as the hospital CEO. Prior to coming to Quero, I spent my career started in actually the VA hospital in San Antonio, which was a very interesting opportunity to be part of a government entity. And from there, I moved into the private sector in San Antonio again with the Baptist Health System. And I spent about 12 years there. Had the opportunity to build a greenfield hospital in New Braunfels, Texas, and went up there in 2012 to build a brand new hospital. It was something I could not pass up. To say you bring a hospital out of the ground, you build your own team versus coming in and starting a team. We built our own policies, we built our own EMR, hired our physicians and new contracts for the emergency room and hospitalists, and had to engage the community to start that hospital. When I came here to Quero, that was a huge opportunity, and my prior experience had been in the chief operating officer role. And what I really like and enjoy about my position here in Quero is, in a small organization, it gives me the opportunity to still be in an operations role due to our size. Our hospital is 49 beds. We are a hospital district, which means we are a taxing entity, which is very important in a rural setting. We own and operate five rural health clinics. Together, our rural health clinics see about 5,500 visits a month, so we do a fairly good turn through there. I employ most of my physicians, family practice and OB. I employ a general surgeon and a podiatrist who utilize our operating rooms. Just about a year ago, we actually purchased a Da Vinci robot for my general surgeon. So that's a pretty big deal for a small rural hospital to be able to, number one, afford that, and then number two, actually have somebody who will use that in our organization. We do have a visiting GYN surgeon who comes and also uses the robot. So that is a great opportunity for a small hospital. Our competitors are about 30 miles from us, and so being able to bring the latest and greatest to a small rural community is really important to build the trust of our community. As I mentioned, we deliver babies. We have a very busy emergency room as well. And I'm fortunate that we've spent a great deal working on culture, working on our opportunities for engaging our community. So it's kept our volumes fairly strong, and that helps us financially as well. Financially sound enough that we are able to work on a new operating room project. We've embarked on an electronic medical record upgrade, which is imperative for us, as well as probably a future lab pharmacy project. So, we might be small, but there's a lot going on in our little community as well as our hospital.
You may be small, but there's some substantial efforts you're doing. Could you talk a little bit about the EMR upgrades that you're doing? Because So many hospitals are engaged in digital transformation. Challenge for a hospital of any size. What are the challenges of for you with a smaller hospital in doing that digital transformation?
Sure. We are right in the thick of it. Our go live is August 1st, and we are pushing to keep our foot on the pedal to make that happen. We have been a Meditech Magic hospital since 1994, so our current system still has the old flashing cursor, and it is more than time to update our digital system so that we can get more data out of it. It is much more user-friendly, but the foundation is we can provide better patient safety because of the communication that it brings. Additionally, our five rural health clinics use a different EMR, and us going to MEDITECH Expanse will go across the entire organization, so I won't. Physicians in the clinic won't have to toggle between EMRs to write order on an inpatient or see what happened in the emergency room. So that connectivity and patient safety is really our goal of our moving towards this upgrade. I think our biggest challenge in it is number one, we've had great board support. But to financially undergo that, I'm thankful our organization is in a place to be able to accomplish that. Our biggest challenge beyond that expense piece is really the resources to do the build. Prior to this, we only had one pharmacist. We use a lot of remote pharmacy. So if you have one pharmacist dedicated to build, who's really doing your pharmacy work? So we had a great opportunity with a local gentleman who was coming out of pharmacy school and was coming home. So we had the opportunity to beef up our services there. But in our nursing world, we staff exactly what we can staff, and trying to pull people off the floor to help learn the system and train and then do the build, I still have to take care of patients and operate. So really stretching that resource, it has been our absolute biggest challenge is can we dedicate enough hours now to continue to hold our August 1st build? So staff are busy, staff are excited, but staff are tired right now trying to get it all in and get it all done. And we're just trying to keep them to understand the light at the end of the tunnel is going to be a lot better, and it's not a train. So that's probably our biggest challenge right now.
You mentioned there's a staffing challenge where they're focused on patient care, but also have to be involved with some of these upgrades as well. Do you have to get a little buy-in to explain, we know this is tough, but the goal of this is to make not only patient care better, but also maybe to make your lives a little bit easier as well? Did you have to kind of sell that a little bit?
We started that at the very beginning. I mean, we really signed on the dotted line last August and really kicked off in January of this year. And staff were very, very excited because they are the ones who have struggled with our current and our antiquated system. And our physicians, the same thing is they're very excited about having something new and easier to use that's going to help them do their jobs better. So that part of it was not a hard sell at all. I don't know that staff understood exactly what it was going to take to be able to do it. It's been an education from my board all the way down to my frontline staff. My board members have some experience with healthcare tangentially. But they kind of thought like, oh, I'm going to go to Office Depot and I'm going to buy a new Microsoft Office, and I'm going to load it in my computer, and that's what it's going to take. And why does that take 6 to 8 months to do that? And so understanding really that effort has taken a little bit. So the board understands what goes in, but even the staff, it's like, okay, you go into training and training and training, so you understand the new system, and then you have to look at workflows, and it's been a little struggle. They're like, just let us build, but we've had to go through the steps to get them there. And in the meantime, they're still trying to see patients on the side. And nursing, of course, is going to be the biggest build, but it hits respiratory therapy. It hits labs. So we've taken like a one of our lab techs really off the bench who's really been dedicated to build. And it's just, I think we're at a point where they didn't understand really the effort that goes in. And so we round on them. We feed them very, very well. We've done off-site celebration of accomplishments and a happy hour and dinner kind of thing, and really thanking them up front. We know that we're coming into our annual review cycle, and we're going to have to do something special for all of them who have put in so many hours. So we just keep trying to hold them up and keep talking with them and thanking them.
Are there some advantages, though, in doing some of these efforts as a smaller organization? Obviously, you mentioned about the work demands and the challenges with smaller staff, but are there some advantages? I would guessing with the size of your organization, you know most of the people, if not maybe all the people in the organization. Does it make it easier to maybe have conversations or for somebody to flag something that says, hey, here's something that's not working? So you don't have those layers that maybe a big bureaucratic system might have in terms of doing some of these things that you're
You
doing?
know, I think in a sense it's easier on the communication side and to get that buy-in. Everybody understands that, okay, Jessica's not working on the floor today and somebody's filling in because Jessica's on the build versus, oh, Jessica's not here today, now I have to pick up more. So in that sense, we have the buy-in and staff are excited to when those who aren't involved actually get trained. Communicating across the system, I feel like we have basically, I'm going to call it 300, well, probably 400 bodies, but 300 FTE, give or take. So communicating across that size of an organization versus, like when I worked in San Antonio, I maybe had 800 or 900 employees that, how do I get that message to all 900 of those people? And here, in that sense, it's a little simpler to be able to communicate. One of the things I actually did before I started here, actually, it had been announced that I got the job and I was starting in a couple weeks, is I start that every Friday, I send out a message and I'll go through Outlook or I'll go through the computer-based communication system and I communicate every single Friday, almost without fail, but I would say 98% of the Fridays since I've been here, I send out a message, really communicating what's going on with the Meditech build, what's going on with I'm recruiting new physicians. What do I need from staff? If I've gotten recognitions from patients about how well something's going. And I did not realize the impact that that could have on our organization, that they look forward to my Friday email. If I haven't sent it, they know I'm probably on vacation or something. And so that's turned out to be a really good communication tool that I didn't understand the impact when I first started it. But that has been a great tool. And I think in a smaller organization, are they going to be recognized? Is there something really meaningful that they need to know? So while not understanding the impact, I think that's made it a little bit easier to help get the word out of what's going on.
There's been a lot of discussion about the challenges for rural hospitals, from recruiting and retention to just the financial challenges that began even before the pandemic. You said your hospital seems to be in a better position than a lot of rural hospitals, but from your perspective, what are the biggest challenges that your organization faces?
Well, if you start with the staffing is always a challenge. Who are you going to be able to recruit that wants to come live in a small town, rural? we feel very lucky that, and I don't think you're in Texas, Ron, so you probably wouldn't understand this little comment, but we are very blessed that we have an H-E-B grocery store here. H-E-B is the greatest grocery store in the country, and I grew up outside Chicago, so they have everything. So, I mean, when I recruit doctors, it's like, oh, you got an H-E-B, that's kind of cool. So, my community is 8,000 people. So you have to find the people who have the desire or the heart to live and work in rural Texas. I had opportunity to interview somebody from the New York area, and I'm like, okay, you're used to being cold, but can you manage 100 degrees? And so understanding that there's that difference. The other piece of it, especially in today's economy, is can we pay enough to be able to recruit? And that really is hard. We have, as I mentioned earlier, our biggest competitor is probably about 30 miles from us in a town that's maybe 75,000 people. They have a lot more amenities. They have two hospitals, and they're able to pay more. And so people are now at a point where they don't mind driving the 30 miles if they're going to earn more money to better support their family. So us being able to keep up with those pay challenges on top of living in a small rural area is very challenging. I just learned I had a key staff person is resigning to go get $10,000 more and to be able to work from home in a little different environment. Honestly, that is going to be very painful and very hard to be able to fill behind that individual. So that, and when you look at can we keep up with the pay challenges, good drives is what can my hospital afford to do? And I can put it into a comparison with a large urban setting. When I was working in San Antonio, my payer mix, which is my mix of insured or type of insurance, I was 97% commercial payer. So Aetna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, all the big payers. And I was in that last 3% was Medicare, Medicaid. Well, you flip it, and in my rural setting today, I'm 85% government payer, meaning Medicare and Medicaid, including Medicare Advantage plans that they don't cover your costs. And maybe I'm 7 to 9% commercial. So that is a huge challenge for us to try to be able to try to be able to keep the cash flowing appropriately, yet take care of our patients. We do run an indigent care program that, again, we take out of our tax dollars to be able to do that. Medicare Advantage plans has been extremely hard on our organization. The state of Texas has gone to Medicare Advantage for state retirees, specifically the teachers' retirement. So we have a lot of retired teachers. They've stayed in our community over the years, but now they're Medicare Advantage. And Medicare Advantage plans slow pay. You can admit a patient to our hospital that is in desperate need of care, but now they've had a stroke. Now they're going to need to go to rehab or nursing and rehab, a retirement center for that rehab. And Medicare Advantage plans have 72 hours to approve, and they may deny, but then you go back and they have a new 72 hours if you appeal. And a lot of times, and I've got case proof that they deny it just to stretch out payment. So that patient now, instead of being in the DRG for 3 days, has now been here for 6 or 7 days. Well, I don't get paid for days 4 through day 7. I eat that. Medicare Advantage plans get 72 business days. Healthcare is 24/7, but they work Monday through Friday and they don't work holidays. So that's been very, very hard for us to say, how do I continue to make ends meet? And as I mentioned, as a tax district, that's what helped keeps our our hospital afloat and keep us going, and then how well we can manage to help cover expenses and make ends meet so that we can afford to do things like upgrade our EMR and be able to bring the latest and greatest technology to our organization that helps want our patients to come here, not just the indigent care folks. And so it's about upholding the image, but the finance piece is one of the things that absolutely keeps me awake at night, as I know it does any CEO. And I'm not naive enough to think that Medicare Advantage plans don't hit large hospitals as well. They just have a better payer mix that it's not as big of a portion as it hits rural healthcare.
I've spent a lot of the last couple months writing about the Change Healthcare cyber attack and its impact on hospitals. Have you seen some impacts financially or in terms of effects on patient care from the Change Healthcare attack?
Oh, absolutely. Change was our intermediary. And, we've gone back to paper billing. That has been a challenge. And when you paper bill, everything slows down. So cash flow and collections, we'll get it eventually, but it's just slowing down. And again, I feel very blessed that we're able to maintain our cash position that we have. But I know rural hospitals that, they kind of live paycheck to paycheck and payroll to payroll. And I anticipate that's going to be very challenging for a number of rural facilities.
Has cybersecurity in general been something even before the Change attack? Has that been also one of those things that causes a little stress or maybe even a couple of sleepless nights?
Oh, absolutely. And I kind of have joked. Really, since I've come here, we've wanted to try to upgrade our EMR. And I used to joke that you used to be able to probably sit in our parking lot on your cell phone and you could probably have hacked our systems, that we used to have old tape drives and it was just an old and antiquated system. So we had to embark on an infrastructure upgrade before we could even dream of updating our electronic medical record. So we could not hire somebody in this local area that had the expertise to be able to do that. So we actually put out for a contract, and we have a contract IT leader, a CIO, and she's been with us now for probably 4 to 5 years. And she has really helped revamp the whole infrastructure. When I first came, we could not have qualified for cyber insurance. I'm really happy to report now that we've gotten on our annual assessments that we've gotten great scores. We're sitting great. We're now, we have cyber insurance coverage, but that has been a major, major impact even before we could get to build and upgrade our electronic medical record. The miles and miles of cable that was pulled out to be able to remap our infrastructure has been incredible.
Are there lessons we should be taking from the Change Healthcare attack? I mean, obviously, healthcare is looking to get more connected, which most people think is a good thing in terms of sharing patient data, making it easier for somebody's traveling to get the care they need if somebody can just look up their health records. What are the takeaways we should be gleaning from the Change Healthcare incident?
I think you can never be too careful and don't be too trusting. And that is something that has been a huge education for my small hospital and my small community, that everybody is so close. And, people say you're taking care of your neighbor, but honestly, we're taking care of our neighbors. And now, it's like, oh, well, somebody used my password. I trust Susie. That's okay. And you're like, no, you can't. And it's been a huge education for my employees that, oh, it appears that, we've had a run on where it looks like somebody is that I'm sending an email to one of my staff that says, hey, I need you to go pick up, so many gift cards. And they're like, Lynn, are you sending that? I'm like, no. And so, when I first came, if they would have had that email, somebody would have gone and said, why the heck is she asking me to do this? Or I got to go get this for Lynn. And so it's taken a lot of education in that you can't necessarily trust what you see and what you read, and to treat people respectfully, but don't give out your codes. Don't give out things that you used to be able, that we have to build that security. And so I think it is, be prepared for the worst, and educate your staff, and make sure you've got good downtime. And if something were to happen and to shut us down, how are we going to respond? And I think now we're better prepared. Are we as prepared as we could be? Probably not. But we're light years ahead, thanks to the partnership with Sirocor and our CIO that's been with us for about 4.5, 5 years. So that's been a good thing.
One thing we love to ask too when we get to talk to healthcare leaders is some lessons on leadership that maybe they've learned that could be helpful to other leaders. Are there any lessons that you've learned as a leader that you think might be especially helpful to other executives and others in leadership positions?
For me, it's communication. And the right level of transparency. So staff understand the why is, while it might be very clear to me why I make the decision that I make, is if it's impacting staff, they need to understand the why behind it. So we recently closed our home health agency. We'd had a home health agency since the mid-80s. Good staff, referrals, great patient feedback. And they're like, why are you closing? Well, we haven't been able to recruit. You get $90 a visit, but you pay a nurse $45 in their travel time and the supplies. You don't make it. And we were realizing about a $300,000 a year loss. And so actually, we were able to share that with our staff and that transparency, and we sold the agency to somebody who's got, our business is hospital. We're not, I don't know home health greatly. We hadn't been able to recruit great healthcare or home health leadership. So give it to an agency who can do that. So we've talked about that, and staff understand, and we were able to transition the staff in the agency into the rest of the organization, but being able to talk through that. So it's communication and the right level of transparency is absolutely instrumental to leadership.
And that ties into what you're saying before with like some of the work you're doing on the EMR upgrade, communicating to staff like, hey, I need to get so and so. So making sure they understand that it's not somebody just taking a day off, they're helping out with something important too, that communication gets the buy-in everywhere and, avoid some headaches that are preventable, which is good. Excellent.
Right, because you get enough headaches as a leader. If you can cut them off at the pass, you're doing really much better.
That's always good. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking the time. It was really great to hear about some of the work you're doing, and really appreciate these insights. Thanks for the conversation.
Sure, absolutely happy to do it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.